the survival of the Jews, their resistance to destruction, their endurance under absolutely peculiar conditions, and the fateful role played by them in history, all these point to the particular and mysterious foundations of their destiny. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, Episode 2, The Magnificent, Mysterious Melchizedek. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In the most ancient area of Jerusalem, the archaeologist Eli Shukran uncovered what was once a site of sacred worship, made up of four rooms. One room contains a square area with an etched drainage channel indicating that an altar once stood there. In another right next door, there is an antiquated olive press. In a third, a mysterious V-shaped carving is etched into the earth, taken by the excavators as signifying a site where the offerings were cut into pieces as part of the service. And finally, and most importantly, there is a chamber with a large rock, clearly, carefully placed in exactly that spot, many thousands of years ago. It is what would be called in Hebrew a matseva, a pillar or sacred marking stone. As an article about the excavation which we have sent you describes it, quote, "This plain slab of rock, which contains no images, was found placed on an exposed hewn stone and is held in place with strong supporting rocks that were placed beneath it and around all of its sides," end quote. Whatever pottery is left dates to the Middle Bronze Age, 1800 to 1600 BCE, the age in which a Mesopotamian man named Abram first walked the earth. This sacred site is more than an excavated curiosity. It may mark the moment of a meeting between the biblical Abram and Jerusalem, and the first biblical mention of that sacred city, in a scriptural story that is often overlooked, but is actually one which profoundly reflects the role that Jerusalem plays for so many men and women of faith today. The story of the Jewish people begins with a Mesopotamian man by the name of Avram, who, in a profoundly pagan age, somehow comes to believe in a God of all heaven and earth. At the age of 75, he is ordered by this almighty being to journey forth from his homeland and from his father's house to the land of Canaan. Abram is told nothing else except for one succinct promise, that though childless, he will somehow become a great nation, and that through his family, the entire world will be blessed. So Avram went, and his faith in God fuels his journey. But is he the only believer on earth? Many biblical readers assume as much, and indeed assert that this is why God has chosen him. That is why, to the bit of anti-Semitic verse, "How odd of God to choose the Jews," Jews themselves have often quoted another very British bit of poetry in response. "Not odd, you sod, we Jews chose God." According to this understanding, Abram is chosen by the Almighty because he is the first monotheist. And yet this interpretation is almost immediately refuted by the text. Abram arrives in the Promised Land and prospers there. A war breaks out between the various city-states, pitting four Canaanite kings against five, and Abram's nephew Lot is taken captive. Abram gathers his men and defeats the forces of the four kings, holding his nephew. He has an army of some 318 men, but his victory is miraculous, a defeat of four city-states. And then, suddenly, another king appears, one who honors Abram, who honors this mysterious monarch in return. Genesis chapter 14, verse 18. "And Melchizedek, king of Shalem, brought out bread and wine, and he was priest of God Most High. And he blessed him and said, Blessed be Abram by God Most High, maker of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand. And Abram gave him a tenth of everything." Here we meet a mysterious man who is both monarch and priest, whose name is Melchizedek, or Melchizedek, a name that can be rendered as righteous king. He reigns over a city named Shalem, Salem, a word that can be translated as peace. Shalem is the city that will later in the Bible come to be known as Yerushalayim, Jerusalem. The site that will be the most influential and sacred city on earth is in an utterly unlikely location. It sits not within the walls of what is called Jerusalem's old city today, but rather south of what is now known as the Temple Mount, sloping down a mountain that in David's age will be called Zion. The location seems of literal agricultural advantage, built on a rocky ridge. It is not on the coast or in an area that would obviously recommend it as a future capital city. but it has two distinct advantages, as can be seen by the image of ancient Jerusalem that we have provided for you today. It is surrounded on valleys by three sides, making it eminently defensible, and it adjoins a precious, ever-renewing water source, one not dependent on rain, a natural spring that will one day be called the Gihon. Melchizedek's own larger theology and priestly role remains murky, but what is obvious is that he and Abram share one profound idea, one which is declaimed by this king and embraced by Abram, a belief in a being named El Elyon. The two words invoked by this monarch are separately names for Middle Eastern divinities, but together they create a revolutionary phrase, El Elyon, the Most High God. Blessed is Abram to El Elyon, Konei Shamayim Va'aretz, the creator of heaven and earth. Thus we learn something striking about this mysterious city. It is somehow bound to God, somehow linked to the knowledge of God, and it somehow seems to have been a sacred site in which at least one man served this God. Monotheism exists before Abram, and it is centered at this moment in Jerusalem. For the archaeologist Eli Shukran, it is only this monotheistic monarch that can explain the excavated altar and worship site. As Shukran said in an interview, quote, "If you're going at that time to other places in the world, in Egypt or Mesopotamia, you could see temples, gold, and idols, and, I don't know, pillars. Here it's simple. The stone, animals, animal sacrifice. The stone is the house of God. No gold and diamonds. Everything is simple." End quote. Simple, unadorned, and, as Shukran further points out, with a striking biblical parallel. As we will see in several episodes from now, when the biblical Jacob dedicates a future house of God, he sets up a stone as a pillar, a matzeva in Hebrew, and pours oil upon the top of it. Thus does this striking sight in Jerusalem, shrouded in mystery, seem to be, possibly, the place where Melchizedek served as minister of monotheism. It was here that he would have brought offerings to the Most High God. It was here that he, like Jacob generations later, would have placed oil of anointing on the sacred stone, hence the adjacent olive press that would have served as source of sacralized oil. It is here that one could find the mysterious messenger of monotheism awaiting Abram's arrival, and it is here that we first encounter a hint that Jerusalem will one day serve as the center of monotheism itself. But it is also at Shalem, at Jerusalem, that we learn something else, that Abram was not the first man on earth to know of the Almighty. There were monotheists, or at least those who believed in a supreme creator God of heaven and earth, something largely unknown in the pagan world. Thus, God must have chosen Abraham for another reason. And soon after in Genesis, he tells us precisely why. Ki yidativ, he says in Hebrew, for I have known him, I have loved him, I have chosen him. Leman asher yitzaveh et banav et beito acharav, veshamru et derech Hashem. So that he will command his children and household after him to keep the ways of God. Abram was loved by God because of his qualifications, not only as a believer, but also as a faithful father. Thus, as a sign of personal love for this man, the Almighty introduces himself to Abraham with his personal name, a sacred appellation spelled YHVH. And soon, the creator of all the world will choose to be known first and foremost as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, joining himself to the family that perpetuates the knowledge of his existence from parent to child. But here is what is incredible. Melchizedek himself somehow understands that it is through Abraham and his family that the creator of all the earth will be revealed. For he, king of Shalem, concludes, not with creation, but with redemption, saying to Abraham, "And blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hand." It is in the miracles of Abraham's life that the Most High creator of the world is to be discovered. Thus, the very first mention of Jerusalem in the Bible and the ancient altar site uncovered therein reveals the complexity of all that the city symbolizes. Melchizedek's ministry is a hint to its inherent holiness and to the fact that the God who dwells in Jerusalem is not the God of Israel alone, but Melchizedek makes clear that it is through the salvific, miraculous story of Abraham's children that the world will discover God, that will serve as a source of faith, perhaps the source of faith, and that one need not be Israelite in order to see it. The turn of the 20th century, Russian thinker Nikolai Bardiev put it this way, quote, "I remember how the materialist interpretation of history, when I attempted in my youth to verify it by applying it to the destinies of people, broke down in the case of the Jews, where destiny seemed absolutely inexplicable from the materialistic standpoint." He added, "Its survival is a mysterious and wonderful phenomenon demonstrating that the life of this people is governed by a special predetermination, transcending the processes of adaptation expounded by the materialistic interpretation of history. The survival of the Jews, their resistance to destruction, their endurance under absolutely peculiar conditions, and the fateful role played by them in history, all these point to the particular and mysterious foundations of their destiny. End quote. It is a fascinating statement, and we can now understand that it echoes the words that a mysterious priest king uttered to Abraham millennia before. Blessed be the Most High God who delivered your enemies into your hand. The meeting of Melchizedek and Abram in the first appearance of the sacred city in the Bible represents the union of the particular and the universal that lies at the heart of Jerusalem itself. Yet this, unfortunately, is not the lesson that generations drew from the story. For centuries, many non-Jews argued that Melchizedek's ministry in Jerusalem indicated that God's covenant with Abraham's children need not be permanent, that Abram's claim to the promised land need not be permanent, that it could be extended to another. Such a theology justified the persecution and exile of Abram's children. But the first king of Jerusalem mentioned in the Bible teaches us the opposite, that other peoples find the relationship with the God of Abraham by marveling at this God's redemptive relationship with Abraham's children. It would be thousands of years after Melchizedek that another head of state would so perfectly enunciate this, a man who founded a country that, throughout its history, would stand in strong sympathy with the idea of a Jewish Jerusalem. Thus did George Washington write to the Jews of Savannah, quote, "May the same wonder-working deity, who long since delivering the Hebrews from their Egyptian oppressors planted them in the Promised Land, whose providential agency has lately been conspicuous in establishing these United States as an independent nation, still continue to water them with the dews of heaven, and to make the inhabitants of every denomination participate in the temporal and spiritual blessings of that people, whose God is YHVH." In October 2016, the United Nations approved a resolution that denied the Jewish connection to Jerusalem and to the Temple Mount. In that very same month, religious Christians came from around the world to Jerusalem to celebrate Sukkot, the Festival of Tabernacles, which, with its Jews, inspired by a verse in Zechariah that depicts the nations of the world doing just that. The poignant moment reflected how these men and women of faith, coming from countries around the world, including, as it was noted, from countries that had voted against Israel in the United Nations, signified how they saw in the Jewishness of the city a source of faith at a time when this Jewishness was under such assault. This friendship, this devotion from biblically inspired individuals around the world is, for Jewish history, a very new phenomenon. But its roots, perhaps, are very, very old. For if there is one place that embodies this newfound, faith-based friendship between Jew and Gentile, it is perhaps this one unearthed altar area where long ago in Jerusalem, Abraham and Melchizedek might have stood and blessed God together. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.